Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. We're going to talk with USCFootball.com beat writer and columnist Dan Weber today about the USC football team 6 days away from the start of USC spring football. I do apologize. I am still a little bit under the weather, but wanted to get another podcast out. There's a lot of stuff going on, getting ready for spring ball. We know the actual spring schedule now. We should have the roster and all that kind of information coming out soon. Of course, USC basketball, we can talk about that. So lots of stuff. If you have any questions for us, podcast at uscfootball.com, or you can leave us a voicemail by calling 641-715-3900, extension 816-646, or just go to our website, peristylepodcast.com. Click on the left side of the page, and you can leave a voicemail right from there. We're on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Audio Boom, TuneIn Radio, a lot of ways to consume the show. And thank you so much, very much, for doing that. And let's bring in our buddy, Dan. What is up, Dan? We're counting down the days to spring football.
Boy, I can't wait. It's been, a 7 weeks or something? It seems like, the unfortunate part of that Rose Bowl is you didn't want it to end, and you just wanted to keep playing the way that went. And so, I'm glad spring ball seems a little early. I don't think it's any earlier, but it just seems like it's getting here pretty quickly. So that's neat. All the buzz. When was the last time you hear all the stuff coming out of the combine in Indy is that the one guy they want to talk about isn't even going to be there because he's just a redshirt sophomore quarterback at USC. And that, Daniel Jeremiah is reporting that that's all they want to talk about is Sam Darnold because they're watching film of other guys in games against Sam Darnold, and they go, oh, my gosh, it's a year when there's not a lot of quarterback, possibilities. And then USC seems to keep edging a little bit higher and higher with the pundits and the Vegas guys and all that. So it's one of those you can't get enough football soon enough right now for USC fans. It's like that hope of, is this the year we come back? Is this the year, we get over the, you had the false hope in 2012 that went so badly. And so is this the year that USC returns to where USC fans think USC belongs.
You mentioned the Sam Darnold stuff, which is pretty funny. So I get up this morning. I think Daniel Jeremiah tweeted that around like 6:30 in the morning. I just happened to be up and I caught this tweet right when he sent it out. And, it's pretty funny. So it's a guy, Sam Darnold's getting ready for USC spring football, yet he's the talk of, of the NFL combine, which starts on Friday. And he was talking to an NFL GM or something who said, everywhere you go, that's the guy that they're talking about. Now, USC has 8 players at the combine, but, so when you see tape, a lot of times Sam Darnold is included in that. And like you said, some of the opponents of USC, you see Sam Darnold. It didn't make USC fans all that happy on Twitter, Dan. There's some of those fans that are like, hey, shouldn't Sam stay for 3 more years? Which they're delusional fans because that's certainly not happening.
Yeah.
It made people a little upset.
Well, yes, he's been kind of lucky. Barkley stayed for a senior year. Leinart stayed for a senior year. Carson Palmer wasn't in that position. I think he was like the 20th ranked quarterback in going into his senior year when he wins the Heisman. But, to this point, USC basically the quarterbacks have stayed. So goodness gracious, you can't even imagine, that he could stay for his actual senior year. But I think USC fans would be happy with that 4th season. If he stayed for his redshirt junior year, they'll be happy to let him go after that. But, yeah, I mean, the buzz that's building around around Sam is kind of like nothing we've seen. I mean, for one player at USC, and it's the kind of thing you're hearing it from everybody. You're not just hearing it, you know, you're hearing it from, you know, people in the SEC, and you're hearing it all around. You're hearing it from UCLA people. I mean, they've, you know, they're no longer trying to say they've got the best quarterback in town and all that. And when we say the best quarterback in town, this is what's so weird. Sam Darnold really will be in a town that has now two NFL teams. Sam Darnold's going to be the most famous football player in LA next year.
I don't know, man. Philip Rivers. Philip Rivers done a lot.
Philip Rivers is good, but he ain't going to be as famous in LA as Sam Darnold.
That's true.
If they walk into a room, Sam Darnold will be the one people are going to notice first.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, that's just. I mean, I think Matt Leinart, he had that a little bit just because he hit in a year where everybody was down and they didn't have NFL back. And it was one of those years where he legitimately was the most famous athlete in L.A. for his, you know, going into his senior season as the Heisman, defending Heisman guy. But to have, you know, a town with two NFL teams and the number one football player is the redshirt sophomore at USC is just, it's just, you know, something we haven't seen much of.
Yeah, you never thought it'd be better than a Josh Rosen or a, you know, anyone in the NFL, but that's certainly the case. That's pretty amazing that he's the talk of the NFL Combine. We'll see how the USC Trojans do this weekend in the Combine, so make sure you check that out. A bunch of guys you can follow. Let's get to the questions, Dan. And I apologize. So I didn't bring my iPad, which is what I use to play voicemail questions. I forgot to bring that in the office today. But we did get a couple of voicemails from Paul in Central Virginia, and they both were about the same thing, both asking about place kicker Michael Brown. So if you want to maybe kind of give your thoughts on USC's kicking situation, he said, you know, if everything he saw, he read about was before he redshirted. What he wants to really know what he looked like last year when he was redshirting and wasn't playing.
He looked like a freshman. You know, he looked like he did pull a muscle. I'm trying to think what muscle, what did he pull? But anyway, he was out of action for a little while. Got a strong leg. I think he was anxious at times. You know, maybe tried to kick it maybe before it was there. Just the whole, you know, getting comfortable, getting relaxed. You know, fitting in. I mean, I think, as it turns out now, USC is very fortunate that they scholarshiped him a year ago. And I know people at the time questioned where, you know, why would you give, you know, a kicker a scholarship when you've already got one scholarship, that kind of thing. But, yes, he'd be kind of hurting right now because we really don't know what the, you know, situation going forward is going to be for Matt Bormeister. You know, is this something that can be resolved in the spring? Is it something, you know, hangover in the summer? You know, is there a possibility for, you know, some sort of resolution, you know, in his favor by next fall? We have no idea. But if that were the case, you know, you'd be going without a kicker, you'd be, you know, having tryouts. Because it just, not exactly, you know, you can recruit somebody in you know, late January. So having him here and having him had a year of you know, practice, and if they go, you know, kind of semi-live when they go, you know, when they do field goals, for example, and they get a rush, and they'll alternate between Bormeister and Brown. And, you know, I just think, it was the kind of experience you expect for a freshman. I think he's got a pretty good leg, pretty good distance, kickoff distance. I mean, I think USC got used to having a guy drive the ball into the end zone, and I think on balance, that's a far better thing to be able to do than to try to directionally kick it, you know, short of the goal line, you know, to one of the, you know, the pylons. So I just think, I think he's got a chance to be that guy who can drill the ball into the end zone regularly. We'll have to see. I mean, I think, and I mentioned on one of the posts today, this is why they practice. This is why they have spring football. This is why they work out in the summer. This is why they're going to be, you know, going at it next August to get you to the point where you're able to contribute. It took Matt, you know, Bormister a couple of years to get to the point where he, you know, could contribute and be the difference, for example, in the Rose Bowl. And so I think, you know, Michael Brown is in that position, and USC's in a fortunate position that he's had, you know, all that opportunity to work with the holders, the snappers, and, well, there'll be a new snapper too this year. So, there's going to be some work, you know, that needs to be done this, spring. And then they've got 3 months through the summer until, you know, August gets here to really, you know, and that's the stuff you can work on your own. And it's great to have a scholarship, you know, caliber athlete to be able to do that with. But I think he's got a shot, you know, to be somebody that will win football games for you.
Let's go to Tarek. He wants to know, who do you expect to emerge at left tackle, considering Chuma Adoga will likely play right tackle?
It's a really good question. I don't know that we know. I mean, I think there are all kinds of, you know, what if, I know Toa said that, for example, he's not going to be cleared totally until after spring ball, but he will be able to snap. You get a sense of he goes to center, Nico goes to, you know, left tackle. That would be one way of doing it. Or, you know, does Toa go to left tackle? And I know there are, you know, people who contend that he'd rather be, you know, guard or center. Is Chris Brown, you know, suited to play outside, or is he really, is he a guard? I think there's going to be some, you know, mixing and matching, and see, you know, what works the best. But I'm probably not, that position is really going to be hard to guess because, again, Toa's not going to be here, you know, competing fully in the spring. So I don't know that they can do the, you know, the complete mix and match. I know the one guy who T. Martin went out of his way, before the Rose Bowl to say had shown up in the 2 weeks prior practices was, Roy Hemsley, who looks like he should be able to be a player. I talked to Roy a little bit about it. He said he'd finally realized how physical the game is at this level. And if you're a big guy who's, you know, been able to, you know, survive on just being a big, big athlete, that's no longer good enough. And he said it all clicked for him. So, and the fact that T picked him out and said he's really, shown up the 2 weeks of bowl practice makes me say, well, we'll take a look at him. And, you know, which side, I don't know for sure. And I don't think Chuma is absolutely locked in to right tackle either. So I just think that offensive line, you're going to see a lot of moving around, and that won't be solidified until pretty well into August, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, that's my guess too. That's what spring ball's for, like Dan said. Eric in Duck Country had a question. Do we know which region new running back coach Dylan McCullough recruited for Indiana? Does he have strong ties in areas where USC isn't recruiting well? Thanks as always, Eric in Duck Country.
Well, I think the thing he gets credit for example, he recruited the Howard kid, who was such a, you know, great rookie year at the Bears, and that was a kid that lost his scholarship when UAB, Alabama Birmingham, dropped football. So I think he got him. I think he was, and you know that he also recruited the next kid, whose name escapes me at this point, Divine somebody, who's going early to the NFL this year, who was from Dylan McCullough's hometown of Youngstown, Ohio. So obviously he played for the Bengals. He was a 7-year you know, coach and administrator and principal at a high school in Cincinnati. So, you know, that's a territory USC seldom, you know, recruited in. For Kentucky purposes, Lamar Dawson got him out of, right outside of Danville, Kentucky, where he was the Mr. Football in Kentucky. And I know there was one player they recruited out of Louisville Trinity. But otherwise, and they did show up at my high school, Cincinnati St. Xavier, for a really good linebacker about 3 years ago, maybe, and he went to Ohio State. But USC's had really little recruiting presence in the Midwest. So I don't know if that will be, you know, a place that we'll talk to, you know, DeLand when he gets on board, a place where they'll say, hey, you know, a lot of football players there. If we can find one or two, we could turn him loose on those guys. But I don't know exactly, because they recruit, they don't just recruit territories. You know, they recruit offensive guys recruit one way and a defensive guys recruit another way. And some of it is positional and some of it is, you know, I mean, USC, you might have T. Martin recruiting a defensive guy just for, you know, it makes the most sense. And so I don't think they, you know, will necessarily lock anybody into an absolute territory recruiting.
Yeah. And USC tends to do it by position anyway. And we've definitely seen that to be one of his strengths. So that should be interesting to see where he fits in with all of that.
Yeah, my guess would be wherever there's a running back that they're interested in, he's going to be recruiting them.
Yeah,
would be my guess, because of the way he's developed. You know, I mean, you're going to want him to be able to tell that story of the three straight guys that he's put in, Tevin Coleman, for starters, into the NFL in recent years that have done, you know, or that we're assuming. This Indiana tailback this year, he's going to the combine, leaving early, will be a third one. But I think they would want DeLand to be able to tell that story to anybody he's recruiting.
Okay, Dan, I don't want you to be alarmed. We have a couple basketball questions, so that's we need some kind of alert. Yes, people want to know about the basketball team. Earl of West LA said, after watching USC lose in the final seconds to Arizona State Sunday, I couldn't help but think the loss of six veteran players from last year's team had a direct impact on the outcome of the game. In spite of the success this team has had this year, there have been critical losses where depth and maturity affected the final score. I was wondering if you had any further insight on why so many players left the program last year, Earl in West LA. So he's blaming it on the players that already were gone.
Well, I mean, I don't think it helped, but by this time of year, as unusual as, you know, when you have six of your 12 guys don't come back, all six who could have come back, that was pretty unusual. And not with a sense of exactly what was going on, and yet, they run off the first 13 games, boom, you know, 13-0. And now they're 8-8 in the Pac-12. It more looks to me like you get into the Pac-12 where teams scout you, where teams know what they want to do to stop you, where teams, you know, where the game really matters. They just don't, you know, and you're not playing everybody at home or on neutral floor, you know, courts. And I think, as unusual, and I think those six guys, you know, a couple of them, did they get talked into going to the, you know, NBA, Julian and Nicola, did they want to, you know, was it school? Did they say, you know, I'm ready to go out, I don't need any more school, I'm going to take my shot? For other guys, was it a case of, wow, they keep recruiting, there's not going to be a place for me to get any minutes on the floor, so I'm going to go. You had, Reinhardt goes to Marquette, where he's had kind of a similar season where he could have some hot games, and he won, you know, I guess one big upset, and I'm trying to remember who it was that where he just went crazy off the bench. But I don't know that there's a single reason that you could say those guys left, but by this time of year that you should not be losing games to inferior teams at the end when you've got everybody back. I mean, they've got Boatwright back now. And I think it's interesting. You know, they put the ball in Boatwright's hands. I mean, I'd rather have Boatwright catching the ball and being fouled and be the guy shooting free throws instead of, it's like, well, we don't trust anybody else other than Boatwright to throw the ball in bounds. And then that, you know, that didn't work out so well. But Earl, there is something is not right for the, that kind of a meltdown. That probably, you know, you're playing a bad team, an underwater team that can't play defense. Everybody knows Arizona State does not play defense. And they hold you without a field goal. They hold you to 1 point in the last 4 minutes. Outscore you 12-1. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's just total lack of poise and focus. It's carelessness, the turnovers, not to get a field goal in those last 4 minutes, hit one free throw. There are so many things that went wrong that if I had to put a list up, you know, having those six guys gone, yeah, it would have helped to have Julian Jacobs on the floor. Probably, you know, I don't think there's any question about that, but, that wasn't why they lost that game. Didn't help. I mean, but, there were a lot more, specific reasons why they lost that game.
Yeah. Yeah. There, I mean, you're 20 something games into the season. Like that's long. That's long gone. This is another kind of question. This is John in Oakland on basketball. Seems more of like from a football perspective, but I'll read it to you. He said, "Hello, Ryan. I love the podcast coverage and insight into USC sports. And I have a basketball related question for you and Dan. It's been said that to be a great team, you have to play great teams. USC men's basketball team had a rather weak out of conference schedule this year. I'm a supporter of Coach Enfield and believe long-term coaching, stability is more important to building a winning program, but so is top talent. My question is, who is responsible for the weak scheduling? Is it Pat Hayden or Lynn Swan? Do you think the program would be better off scheduling top mid-major schools like Gonzaga or St. Mary's and traditional powerhouse schools like Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, etc.? Would this approach to scheduling aid in attracting more 4- and 5-star players to USC? Best regards and fight on, John in Oakland.
You know, I'm not sure about attracting more players, you know, 4- and 5-stars. I mean, I think they're doing pretty well recruiting. I mean, I think you can hardly, you know, where USC is located. I mean, clearly Southern California is the hotbed of high school recruiting. I mean, I think there was the two CIF games, the doubleheader played at Galen last Friday with Cheeto Hills and Mater Dei, and I'm trying to think of the team from out in the valley that has the number one kid in the country. You had three of the top, like, seven high school programs in America, and they can all, you know, bust into the game. And so you should not need, or it shouldn't even matter who, you know, what your schedule is. I think you can cross Pat Hayden and Lynn Swan off the list of people who are making the basketball schedules. That's not happening. I think Andy has tried. I think the problem they had this year is some of the really good teams. I mean, I think, you know, from what I understand, they really tried to get a game with Kentucky, and they were willing to even, you know, they didn't have to get a return game. And I think Kentucky didn't want to play them. And if I'd looked at USC's talent, I'd be maybe a little hesitant as well. Now, they did play Southern Methodist, the ranked team who's, you know, really well coached and played strong all year long. They played BYU at Staples Center, a BYU team who just beat Gonzaga. Yeah, I like your idea. I think St. Mary's and Gonzaga would be a couple of teams I'd really try to get, you know, in some kind of a, you know, either relatively neutral game I mean, those teams, I mean, one of the negatives is both of those teams get into L.A. every year in their schedule. So they don't absolutely maybe want to come to L.A. as much as maybe some other teams who recruit here and don't get into L.A. But that's a good idea. I think if I were them, those would be, you know, two of the people I'd definitely try to, you know, arrange some kind of, you know, whether you can get, you know, some kind of a tournament situation together. Do you go in with UCLA on that wooden, you know, tournament and or wooden classic, whatever, and try to get somebody to come in and play you on a neutral floor like in Anaheim or Staples, whatever. But I don't think the schedule, it wasn't great, but it was, I mean, there are big programs playing worse schedules. So, you know, it wasn't the worst schedule, that you'll ever see.
We got a couple more, Dan, and these are more of the, NCAA, variety, and people just seem to love to talk about that stuff still. So I saved them for the end. So if you hate hearing about this kind of stuff, cause we get people that like always want to hear about it. And then other people like, I never want to hear about it. So sorry, we get the questions and we're just trying to answer them. AGW wrote in, he had a two-parter. He said, what do you think it would cost USC to buy out the Pac-12? And then after McNair finishes whipping the NCAA, does USC maybe go to the NCAA and say, no lawsuit, but get us out of the Pac-12 at no cost to us? That's AGW.
You know, something's going to have to happen about USC and the Pac-12. I mean, I was used the example, now that the Big Ten, with the way their network's going and the way their TV, and they're going to renegotiate their TV contract twice between the time USC got that, what was the groundbreaking and everybody said it was the greatest thing in the world. They will have renegotiated their TV contract twice before the USC or before the Pac-12 gets renegotiated in 2024-25. And it looks like right now there's a good chance if you're the University of Illinois or Rutgers in the next 8 years before something new comes to play for USC and the Pac-12, those two schools will each take in something like $200 million more over that 8-year period from the Big Ten than USC will take from the Pac-12. That's just unacceptable. I mean, it's like $200 million is like real money. I mean, it's like, you know, in the SEC, you're going to be talking about $120 to $150 million for each of their teams, more than each Pac-12 team. What the Pac-12 was trying to do hasn't worked. The network hasn't worked. The distribution hasn't worked. The increase in dollars, it's just not there. There's almost no, you know, they're very little, you know, $1 million a year, compared to, you know, where it's just going off the charts in the Big Ten, the SEC. So, I think, and I asked Lynn this the other day and nobody seems to have a really good answer, but USC, I think, is going to have to take the lead. And they're going to have to be the ones that start making some moves. I don't think it's unrealistic to think that what most people think, that, you know, in, you know, the next decade, there will be 4 16-team super conferences. You know, basically right now you've got a 65-team, you know, Power 5 group. Well, that would give you the 64. You'd have an East and West division or a North and South division in each of those conferences, 8 teams. When they play their conference championship, it will be, in effect, the first round of an 8-team playoff. But it sure looks like it's going that direction. And I think, you know, there may be some tough times for some of these teams in the Pac-12. I mean, do they all survive? You know, they all make it to the 16-team super conferences. And if so, how does that all play out? And who orchestrates that? because the TV dollars are not just going to keep increasing and increasing and increasing, which everybody thought was just, you know, TV programming. The best TV programming for the best demographics is sports, and it's live, and you've got to, you know, you got to watch it. There's nothing, you know, it doesn't do you much good if you save the game till next week, like other programming. So, and then all of a sudden, you see ESPN losing millions and millions and millions of subscribers. They're not going to have the money to keep pouring in extra dollars, big, big extra dollars. And maybe it'll be a case of a few programs and a few conferences get the big bucks and the rest get less. And, you know, in order to give big bucks out to the big conferences, they're going to have to take the other conferences way down. That would not surprise me if that happened. But, you know, I think USC will take, you would hope they would take any creative ideas to maybe be able to say to the Pac-12, things have to change or else. And how that plays out the next few years is going to be a pretty interesting story. I mean, one encouraging thing is that Lynn does have an extensive sports TV background and an extensive list of contacts and people in the industry. And I just think USC is going to have to be very creative in how they get to where they need to be if they want to be one of those teams that, as Lynn has said and, you know, Clay has said, and all the fans believe, is that they should be in the running, in the hunt, in the mix, you know, for the national championship most years. Well, you can't do that if the University of Illinois is getting, you know, $25 million a year more than USC. Makes it really hard. So something's got to happen. All suggestions are welcome.
Yeah.
For what USC does and where they go and how they get there.
Well, we got one last one for you, Dan. John in Pasadena, bear with me, it's a little long. I don't know how timely it is, but I'll read it to you. It's his question. One of the many frustrations I had with Pat Hayden involved him not lifting a finger when the BCS Bowl Championship Committee was considering vacating USC's 2004 BCS Bowl Championship, which USC won after defeating Oklahoma in January 2005. Like the Associated Press, who awards a national championship trophy, the BCS is not part of the NCAA. While they're obviously influenced by NCAA procedures and rulings, the BCS's decision against USC was purely discretionary and made at a 2011 committee meeting where Pat Hayden was a no-show. But I remember Hayden effectively telling the BCS their statements in the media to go ahead and take away the trophy. Hayden was wrong to not stand up for USC and did a great disservice to the university. There's a big distinction with the 2005 season games being vacated, as Reggie was receiving some benefits from the rogue agents of 2005, but not during 2004. As the NCAA ruling to vacate the last game of the 2004 regular season against UCLA was based upon nothing but malicious spite. USC should get the 2004 BCS trophy reinstated. What do you think, Dan? Can something be done? This would be a great initiative for Lynn Swann. I also checked, and the 2004 team captains were Matt Grootegood, Sean Cody, and Matt Leinart. Maybe this could be a cause they can take up as well. Whew! John in Pasadena.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a great point. I don't disagree with anything you said. The issue would have to be, USC, this is where it's been, say you got those three guys and said, come on, let's make this a case for all you and you guys and all your teammates. You need to have USC behind you. You need to have the power of USC, prestige, everything that USC stands for behind you. They would have to say, this was done out of spite. This was virtue signaling in the worst way. And God only knows if, you know, USC wasn't virtue signaling as well. We were bad boys and, you know, and that was just done maliciously. obviously they've never, you know, they've never taken a Heisman Trophy away from anybody. They've never taken a national championship away from anybody like that. And here they go, because they could take their shot at USC, and it didn't look like USC was resisting or saying, this is not fair. There wasn't anything, you know, that remotely required USC to lose that championship. And now, obviously, you know, the NCAA's decision-making is so called into question and so corrupt and so not to be believed. I think USC ought to ask for both of them back at this point. Any real court of law, that the case would be thrown out. If you found the prosecutors colluding and making up evidence, the case gets thrown out. I mean, and one would love to see USC, now that they've made the $6 billion and they got it early in their campaign for USC, and they're extending it, you know, they're extending it for another $3 billion for three more years. I'd like to see them. I think it actually would help their fundraising if they made a stand and said, you know, with the McNair case coming up for trial in the near future, and we say near future in this case, another year and a half is probably still the near future, to coordinate it, you know, with that and say, look, we're gonna defend our good name. We got railroaded. We didn't realize it at the time. Now we do. And the NCAA better make good. And one of the things the NCAA ought to do is remove all the asterisks from the media guide, reinstate Reggie Bush, and then make the case where the NCAA is required to write a letter to the BCS saying, we call into question our own, you know, this is after the trial, like you said, you know, after the trial, we call into question our own, and that ought to be part of this some way. You wish USC could get in on on the trial so that they could, you know, say part of the settlement ought to be that the NCAA has to apologize to USC and has to put in writing to the people affected that these things should be reinstated and that they got it wrong and they made it up. And they're sorry. And I think it's a great idea. And I'm all for it.
Well, Dan, great stuff. Questions all over the place. You got the current football team and spring practice starting, but people want to talk about many other things too. We'll see. The basketball team tips off. We're taping this in a couple of hours. So see if USC can take care of business against Washington State at the Galen Center and then Washington a little bit later on. And then, of course, the Pac-12 tournament, where they'll likely play like a Washington or Oregon State in the first round. But yeah, the NCAA stuff, always interesting questions here people are sending in.
Yeah, well, this is a perfect week where you can go in every direction. Next week, we're looking at football. We'll have, it depends on what day we do it, but maybe we'll have at least one practice in the books and we can talk about that.
For sure, yeah. Tuesday, Thursday, practices. Was it 3:15, I think they
3:15.
Said? And then like 11, 11 on Saturday?
No, 10.
10 o'clock,
10 on
sorry.
Saturday.
They're all open to the public. So, yeah, if you want to come out. We can't really talk to you if you come to practice. We can talk to you outside, but they limit us. They put the media, I think it's on the north side of the Goo Gate, and then and fans and family go to the south side of Goo Gate. So we're not allowed to mingle with you guys, but maybe before or afterwards.
Or with the families. Or with the families.
Yeah, yeah. They put that in there. We're not allowed to talk to
them. We're in the media pen, as we call it.
They're very worried about things that I don't know if you should be worried about, but it's funny. Any outside media person comes and they start questioning, like, why do they do this? And like, yeah, we don't know. They've just been doing it for a while. Really from the sense of sanctions, you know.
Gee, this has been gone for, I think, a while. Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to remember.
But that's how this all kind of started. So, but anyway, great stuff from Dan Weber. Hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. Again, apologize. My voice is not the greatest, but hopefully feeling better by the time spring ball rolls around. And we'll be rolling and do some more. Might do one more podcast this week if we get Gerard on talking recruiting. Not exactly sure, but we'll see. We'll play it by ear. But if not, we'll talk to you. We'll certainly talk to you next time. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is the Peristyle Podcast.
Most people know that buying or selling real estate is no small undertaking. Understanding the market value of your home, pricing, advertising, closing, and perhaps even selling personal property along the way are all examples of the real estate journey. And Michael Moline Real Estate has the experience to help make that journey an enjoyable one. Southern California real estate inventories are at historic lows, so there is no better time than now to sell your residential property. Whether you're moving into a bigger home or downsizing, personal property is often a component of the real estate transaction. Michael Moline Real Estate has industry expertise to help you with both your real property and your personal property as you get ready to transition. Michael Moline Real Estate specializes in properties located on the west side of Los Angeles and the southern San Fernando Valley communities. Allow Michael Moline Real Estate to give you a free comparative market analysis and home valuation so you know how much your home is worth today. Contact Michael Moline at michaelmolinerealestate.com. That's Michael, M-O-L-I-N-E, Real Estate.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.